The Tamil family fighting to stay in Australia will know more about their future when their case goes to the federal court in Melbourne tomorrow. We've been discussing that this morning. They're currently being held on Christmas Island after being granted an 11th hour court injunction against their deportation. Prime Minister Scott Morrison says he cannot allow the family of four to stay. Labor's Shadow Minister for Home Affairs, Christina Keneally, says their case is exceptional.
In this particular debate, what we have is a question not just of law, but a question of values, a question of compassion, a question of discretion. There is discretion in the Migration Act, and it goes to a question of judgment and how you exercise that judgment. So it's not a straightforward question. If it was, we would just have a computer algorithm that made these determinations.
That's Shadow Minister for Home Affairs, Christina Keneally, speaking on our show a short time ago. Meanwhile, the family says that they fear persecution if they are forced to return to Sri Lanka. Mario Alrutas is the Advocacy Director for the People for Equality and Relief in Sri Lanka, a Tamil advocacy group which is based in Washington, D.C. Welcome to RN Breakfast.
Thank you, Hamish.
What are the risks, in your view, that this family might face if returned to Sri Lanka?
What we know with relative certainty is that they will be detained on arrival at the airport. The authorities have arrested Tamils who were deported back to Sri Lanka in the past if they had left in ways deemed illegal by the state. And the question, of course, remains what would happen to the children at this point. But I think beyond that, there have been cases of torture and harassment and intimidation of people who have returned back to Sri Lanka. And I think that will be the biggest fear, especially with the attention that the case has been getting.
It's interesting that you say that, because the Australian Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade has said that Sri Lankans face a low risk of mistreatment that can amount to torture if they're returned. Do you dispute that analysis? That's what the Australian Department of Foreign Affairs is saying.
No, I think it depends. Sri Lankans from around the world are getting deported, including from countries such as the Middle East, for overstaying visas and for other reasons. But when it comes to Tamils, and particularly to Tamils who have a perceived relationship to perceived or real relationship to the Tamil Tigers, I think that changes the dynamic. And I think at that point, the state intelligence mechanism kicks in, where it harasses and surveys people and has been known to detain people arbitrarily. And it's at that point where we believe that most of the torture happens. And if you look at cases in the UK, there is evidence of people who have been deported who were tortured on their return.
Can we just talk about the timeline, though? Because, again, the Australian Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade says that there's been few verified reports of torture since the 26-year civil war against the Tamil Tiger rebels ended in 2009. Are you saying that these accounts have been happening in the last decade, post-2009?
Yeah, that's absolutely untrue. There's been several UN reports that have detailed torture after 2009, dozens of reports of torture and extrajudicial killings, abductions. The Sri Lankan government has been involved in those crimes. In 2015, with the change of the government, is when many people thought things would change, and indeed things weren't as bad as they were in the years previously. However, even this year, the UN expressed concern about continuing torture. The US State Department actually released a report this year expressing concern about torture that's been happening. Excuse me. So I think, no, it's untrue to say that there's only been a few isolated cases.
And you talked about the perception of association with the Tamil Tigers. I mean, obviously, this particular family has been going through the immigration process in Australia. Their claim for asylum has been denied. It's gone through various stages of the court system. And repeatedly, we have been pointed to the fact that, and this is in court documents, that Nadez, the father, had frequently travelled between Sri Lanka, Kuwait and Qatar for work during the civil war between 2004 and 2010. And as a result, the Immigration Assessment Authority didn't accept that he had links to the Tamil Tigers. I mean, can you help us understand how someone might have been able to do that kind of travel if they were under any kind of severe threat?
Yeah, I think the LTT was only again prescribed by the Sri Lankan government in early 2008, I believe. And there was, you know, the ceasefire only officially broke down at that point. while people were detained, the number of people who were linked to the LTT was so big. I'm pretty sure that some people would have not been known to be members of the LTT or related to the LTT. So in that sense, I think it was only after 2009 where they made a more bigger sweep and looked at the files that they captured from the LTT, the details that they had captured where they had known which individuals were members of the LTT. But also in this particular case now that with the international attention that it's getting, that they would know for sure, and that this would put him at enormous risk of questioning. And in the past, members of the LTT were rehabilitated, or so-called rehabilitated by the government. And even with that clean sheet provided by the government, they were subjected to harassment and intimidation and torture sometimes. So I think that in itself is not enough to say that he will not be harassed or tortured even.
So this is a claim that has been made by some of the supporters of this family, that the notoriety around their case might in fact change their circumstances upon return. What are you saying then about the implications of the high profile nature of this family?
The high profile could work out in two ways. Of course, it could provide protection in one sense. But I think in the case of Sri Lanka, it hasn't really provided protection. Sri Lanka's reaction, especially if you look at what happened after the Easter Sunday attacks, has been to crack down on activists and journalists and others. And even someone like me, who has a relatively high profile, have been targeted for harassment and military intimidation the last time I was there in May. And I have a foreign passport. Even with that protection, I have been somewhat targeted. So I do think the implications of them being out in public, and particularly that Nadis is known as a former LTT member, will have brought him into the spotlight.
So to put it bluntly, if his family is returned to Sri Lanka, are they safe?
I don't think anyone can guarantee their safety, no.
But I suppose it goes beyond that. Do you think they are in genuine danger if they are returned?
Yes, and I think also the Sri Lankan context overall must be taken into consideration. It's only been 5 years since abductions and killings were basically a daily occurrence on the island. And the legacy of the war has not really been dealt with. And not just the extreme violence that was largely perpetrated by the state, but also the political grievances that gave rise to the Tamil resistance in the first place. And the promises to investigate these atrocities by the government were largely made for the benefit of the international community. And what we're facing now is an election where the defense secretary at the time, who is thought to have commanded the troops who stand alleged of committing genocide and war crimes, is now running to be president. And there's a good chance that he might even win. So that will also change the security situation in the ground. And we're speaking about in the next 2-3 months. So the situation is also not stable in a way that we can say for sure these repeated occurrences against Tamils will not happen again. And Sri Lanka has been seeking to rebuild the relationship that it has damaged internationally due to its abuses during the war. And the international community, including Australia, had readily accepted those pledges at face value in order to rebuild those largely military but also relationships. And in March this year, Australia launched a set of military exercises from Sri Lanka as part of the Indo-Pacific endeavour. And this was Australia's largest ever defence engagement. And over 1,000 Australian Defence Force personnel were there. And Sri Lanka torturing Tamils and harassing those deported it's not really a convenient narrative for these countries. And the eagerness to show Sri Lanka as a safety destination is also partly due to that, because there's this eagerness to rebuild the relationship with this country.
Mario Araltas, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.